There will be some cars in more demand than others, but on the bank statement, there's no photographs.
Tom, would you say you're a dying breed of old school entrepreneur?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I look around me now, I look at the industry and I look at how it's been operated by others, and it's just not the same. It's not the same, it's not got the same mentality. What I find is very interesting, and I've been studying this for a while now, because I've been wanting to do a podcast with you for quite a while, because I know how popular and how many followers and how big you are on YouTube. So I've saved some stuff up that I've not discussed with other people, which I think would be interesting for this podcast.
Great.
And what I find is very noticeable to me is the lack of personalities of people in the car business. They're all dry, sour-faced, you know, just like watching paint dry. They haven't got that personality, that charisma, and I'm finding that's dying out.
Right.
That's one of the things. And a personality in any business, whether it's buying and selling supercars, luxury cars, classic cars, and anything, you need to have a personality. Because it's all about connecting. For me, I'm a people's person. So I buy people. I can go and look at a car, I can like the car, I can't like the person, I don't buy the car.
How has the industry changed how long have you been in it?
Over 50 years now.
Wow.
We're celebrating our 50th year now. And as I said, this is the first job I've done this morning since my 62nd birthday. We celebrated on Saturday here on the Hartley Estate with family. So I was also looking forward to making that a point. Nothing will change for me, though I'm 62. I get up in the morning, I was up this morning at 5:30, doing emails. I wake up most mornings at 5:30 and I'm at it by 6:00. And that's what I do. And I enjoy doing that.
Do you get a buzz out of doing a deal?
Every time.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
Even if it's a bad deal.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you have to do bad deals. And that bad deals mean that you lose money on some cars. But the size of this business is today, it's inevitable that's going to happen because of the stock that we have to carry.
Yeah. And what's the total stock you've got in right now?
Today, it would be in excess of 30 million.
Wow.
And it's quite low, to be honest with you. You know, we have some of our cars can be 5 and 10 million. So
yeah,
when that happens, it goes from like that to 40, 50 very quickly.
Yeah.
But we have carried over 100 million on stock on site.
Wow.
So it can get up to as high as that.
And if there's any cars right now you could grab and have in the showroom, what would they be? What sells great?
You know, anything sells great if the price is right.
Right.
So there isn't a car. For me, I don't look at that. It's what the buy, the quality of the buy is. And what one man likes, another man doesn't.
Yeah.
So it's very important that, and that's another thing where New School doesn't understand. That line you just gave me.
Yeah.
Okay, there will be some cars in more demand than others, but on the bank statement, there's no photographs.
Yeah.
So whatever you bought and sold makes a profit is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It is to me as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But, you know, in short-term answer to your question, Ferrari's always a strong brand.
Yeah.
Ferrari's always good. Porsche, very good. But generally, for me, whatever I got off in the way of luxury performance or classic cars is a good buy if I buy it correctly.
Yeah. And is the market a bit sort of strong and overhyped at the moment?
No, I think what's also not quite clear. Again, I use the term one man's meat is another man's poison. You put the television on, it can be CNN, ABC, and I have CNN on all the time, and Bloomberg, and you listen to some of the reports that are coming through, and it would almost make you go and cut your wrists. Well, it's the totally opposite in the real world, because there's lots of wealth out there, and the people who had lots of money have got more money than they had before. So wealth will make wealth, and money will make money.
Yeah.
And at this caliber of the clients that we deal with, okay, they might go through a little bit of a patch, but if they're hands-on old-school entrepreneurs, they just make it happen.
Yeah.
And it will happen if you want it to happen. But if you listen to the television, you say, oh, I'm not going to go out to you because it's going to be horrible. That's exactly how it's going to be.
Yeah. It was really interesting talking to Carl earlier because he says he'll take watches in for cars and he'll trade watches for cars.
We took 5 watches in the last week, which was £500,000. On average, one watch was 250.
Yeah.
But 500,000. There was one watch coming in at one stage for £1.5 million.
Wow.
One watch.
Yeah. So you trade cars, you trade watches, you trade whatever.
But that's what we do. You know, at the end of the day, we buy and sell. And you've been here, you visited here a couple of times. In fact, you're one of our our regular clients now.
I keep buying
every time you come here to do an interview, you buy a car.
Yeah, so, that's really
which, I, which I'm very proud of, and you're most welcome to come anytime you want. So you know, when people come here and you can see when they arrive, you've done it yourself now. It's quite different to visiting a city centre showroom for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
First of all, the garden areas are always immaculate and flowered up in the summertime, and the wintertime is the same. The ground is always immaculate. And at the fact that we have four houses on the estate, my house and Carl's in particular, it just gives people that homely feeling.
Mm.
You know, it's not like, will they be here tomorrow?
Yeah.
We've been here for over 50 years, there's a good chance we're going to be here tomorrow.
Mm.
That's even just making it more concrete.
Yeah. What's the most expensive car you've ever sold?
Well, we can't talk about that on record, unfortunately, because we had to sign a declaration. In some cars, we do have to sign declarations on, but we can't discuss the sale. But it was in the tens of millions.
Wow.
Tens of millions.
And what's the most expensive car you've sold that you can talk about?
Well, when you get to the level I'm talking about, you know, recently we sold a Bugatti for 3.9 million to a customer. I don't know if you were told the story. It was one of Carl's customers originally, the young kid phoned him up. Were you told the story?
No.
A young kid phoned Carl up and talked about Lamborghini Urus. And Carl could tell he was a kid on the phone, but Carl also could remember when he was a kid. And he used to do that for me. So he gave him the respect and the time.
Mm.
And the kid was asking all the right questions, like an adult would do. So a 25-minute conversation lasted, and it ended. And the kid said to Carl, before it ended, he said, what do I do now to reserve it? Carl said, well, obviously, you haven't got a credit card. He said, how old are you? He said, I'm 12. He said, do you want to get your mum and dad with a credit card? He said, and I'll reserve it for you. 10 minutes went by. A call came in from my lady. And she said, you've just been talking to my son, because we're in Dubai at the moment. English, also live in Cheshire and live in South Africa. And she said, you said to call back with a credit card deposit. I'm just about to give him a credit card deposit. So the car was sold. And they flew here a couple of weeks later in a helicopter. There are more people arrive here by helicopter than they do by cars. That's quite knowledgeable to people. And they arrived in a helicopter on Saturday afternoon, and Carl wasn't here. And I met the young kid, and the guy told me, he said, I followed your career for years and years and years. My father used to follow it. He said, I also followed how you educated your sons in the business. He said, I thought, I'll try it with him. He said, that's why I'm here.
Mm.
And he looked in the corner, we had a Bugatti Supersport. And he said, what do you think of them? And I speak my mind, even if I don't like a card, I'm trying to sell it to a customer, I'll give them my honest opinion. And I said, you know, I'm not a lover of Bugatti, which I'm not. And he said, well, I'm going to buy a Chiron the other day. And he told me about a car that I knew where it was, 1 mile from where he lived. Not naming the dealer, been there for 6 months. But I happen to know the guy who owned the car, who left it in the dealership. So I said, I can buy that car. He said, really? He said, how much can you buy it? He said, well, they asked me $4 million for it. I said, I can save you a few pounds, I can save you 100,000. He said, well, you can sell it to me for 3.9. I said, I think I can, give me 2 minutes. So I phoned the guy up who owned the car, and I told him the truth. I said, this guy's been to look at your car. Anyway, he said, okay, I agreed to deal a price with him. Went back out, told him it was his for 3.9 million, and we delivered it the next day. He lived 1 mile from the dealer. We'd had the car for 6 months. So the essence of the story is, never judge a book by its cover.
Mm.
I'd always take an inquiry seriously.
Mm.
That's what you call old school.
Right.
That wouldn't happen today in a modern showroom.
Yeah.
Had you not walked in there with £1 million in a suitcase or 200,000 or 300,000, they wouldn't talk to you.
Yeah.
That's just a deal coming through. Yeah.
Why don't you like Bugattis?
Because I've seen Bugatti for a long time. I've seen them before they were actually launched, going to Geneva Motor Show for many years. And I say I don't like them. I don't think you need to spend £4 million on a car to have a great supercar. That's why I don't like them. And I'm very much... I like my pound for pound, my value for money.
Yeah.
And I like to think if you could put 5 or 6 supercars in replace of the price of a Bugatti, I think that's much more enjoyable.
Mm. And what do you think is a great value supercar?
A great value supercar today, well, there's some Porsches now that have become, classic cars or newer cars?
Either.
And the classic, Jaguar are getting quite strong in the classic market now. They're catching up in prices where they should be. Again, you can't get away from Ferrari and Porsche. What's good value for money? Anything that's low mileage with full service history and it's good condition, it's good value for money.
Mm. And what cars at the moment do well for the residual, like hold their value well?
Well, the most successful car in modern times today, which is quite incredible because I didn't really like the car when it came out, and I'd done a press piece with, I think, Autocar magazine, giving a bad opinion of, I don't think it'll be that successful. So I'm first to put my hands up and I get quotes wrong. It was Lamborghini Urus. It's been the most successful residual value car that I've ever remembered.
Right.
You know, you could have had a Lamborghini Urus 5 years ago, done 30,000-40,000 miles in it, and get your money back.
And is that because there's so few of them?
Yeah.
Everyone wants them.
And everybody wanted them, yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, after I made that statement, it was just on launch. I hadn't driven one, so I was a bit premature making that statement. And I drove one, and I can understand why they're so popular, because they are a great car. You don't actually need an Aventador if you've got a Lamborghini Urus.
No. What about the RSQ8? Because I've just bought it off you for my
Yeah,
wife. I mean,
that's
that's surely a good value car.
fantastic car.
Yeah.
Fantastic car. I drove that car,
Yeah.
and it was just.
Is it not like having a Urus,
But
but.
this is the next good point you're making. Excuse me. That car you've just purchased for your wife? I drove that car last week, and I said to Carl exactly the same thing, and we agreed it's just a Urus with an Audi badge on it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Fabulous car to drive.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because you wouldn't know the difference if you blindfolded somebody and said, "What are you driving?"
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds great as well, doesn't it? And
Great
yeah.
car. I hope you enjoy it. I hope your wife enjoys it.
I'm sure she will. Yeah, she's getting rid of the Range Rover. She's had enough of that.
Yeah. Range Rover's been quite successful over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
The new model has been very successful.
Yeah. Do you think it's a bubble? Do you think the market, because normally you buy new cars and they drop, don't they?
Well, they do, but you know, at the end of the day, when you work hard and you want what you want in life, as you get older, you find, I know it's important, but it's not that important. That's what it is, that's what it is.
Yeah.
If you want to drive it, you've got to pay for it.
Yeah.
But of recent time, that hasn't been the case.
No.
The last 2 or 3 years, people have been buying cars and actually not losing any money at all.
And do you think that's
Well,
COVID lockdown, low supply?
that won't last.
No.
It won't be something that lasts. No, that'll definitely, and it's starting to disappear a little bit
Yeah. Is the customer always right?
now. Well, with me, it isn't, because I've got that mannerism, as I've said to you earlier. I speak my mind, and sometimes it gets me into trouble, but I say it as it is, and I feel better with that. So, you know, if somebody was giving me an opinion on something, I wouldn't necessarily. This sounds quite strange for me to say this with my track record, but I'm not actually a salesman. I don't sell anything to anybody, and if somebody tries to sell something to me, I wouldn't buy it. So the point I'm making, when somebody comes here, the brand, the quality and the product is good enough to sell itself, sorry.
So when you say you're not a salesperson, what are you then if you're not a salesperson?
I'm a person who looks at a person in the eye, answers the questions that they want to know, and tells them what the deal is. I wouldn't go into one, "That car looks lovely with you. You look lovely in that car," and all that shit that modern salesmen do now. If I tell them to, excuse my friend, I tell them to fuck off. You know, and I do that when I walk into a clothes shop. He tells me that if I put a jacket on, I don't shop. I've been married. My wife's a shopaholic. Okay, she shops. She's just a shopaholic, and I think I've been shopping with her twice in 43 years. Twice,
Yeah.
43 years. So I haven't got time to shop. That's the most important thing for me. I haven't got time to shop. So I go to places that I know me, and I walk in there. I know what I want. Put it on. But in the past, if somebody had passed comment, a guy in the shop, "That jacket looks nice on you," I wouldn't buy it,
Yeah.
because I won't be forced. I'm quite sensible enough and educated enough, I believe, to know whether a jacket looks nice on me or not, if
Yeah.
I'm going to be wearing it. So the type of guy we deal with here, he's been very successful, works very hard for his money, and he comes into a showroom for a salesman to tell him how, you know, shit that he doesn't want to hear. He hasn't got time to listen to it.
Yeah.
He knows if he wants the car or he doesn't want the car. So that's what I call respecting the customer's education, his personality. You know, he doesn't need to be told a lot of shit,
Yeah.
or sound like he's been told a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And that's the clientele I deal with.
Right. So you do think the products can sell themselves?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You hold on a second. You're a perfect example. You're a perfect example.
Yeah.
You walked into this morning to do a podcast for me. You see an RS6. Well, you sold it.
No,
Why?
just
Because
knew I
you wanted
wanted
one.
one.
Thank
Yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, you wanted one. I think it took
Yeah.
you about 4 minutes to buy it.
Yeah.
You asked two, three questions from what I understand, and you bought it.
Yeah.
Is that not confirming what I've just said?
Yeah, true. Because when I last came and I saw the
You've done the same thing.
930, yeah.
You've done the same thing.
Yeah.
By the way, that was a fantastic car.
Yeah.
Hey, you still got it?
Yeah.
Great car.
Yeah. You can almost daily that.
Do you know, I sold so many of them in the day when they were new. I wrote one of them off when they were new. But honestly, there's nobody, this is going on record, nobody sold more 911 turbos in the 80s, 70s and 80s than Tom Hartley.
Really?
Fact.
Yeah.
And there's not anybody sells more than us now.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, when I was independent, and it was just me, and there wasn't my sons around at the time, I sold them, you know, more than any 10 dealers in this country.
Mm.
All them old 10 dealers have gone now.
Yeah.
You know, the Motor Tune was an old Porsche company. It might mean nothing to you. Motor Tune was no big Porsche dealer in London. And they got quite AFN, were big Porsche dealers.
Yeah.
None of them exist now.
Yeah.
Well, AFN do still in Reading.
Mm.
But they call it Porsche Reading now.
Yeah. And Carl got into the business really young, didn't he?
Yeah, both my sons did.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a way of life because, I mean, he's quite fortunate because most young men, probably 8 out of 10, love cars. And he just happened to be fortunate enough that he started with the car business.
Mm.
So both my sons took advantage of an opportunity. I don't feel guilty for giving them that opportunity to make the best out of life and be in the car business. But I took them out of school at the age 11 and 12, and all their education was done sitting in my office. In the showroom, and we had to devise a program for them, for watching CNN news, looking at the Times newspaper, do some sport, play golf. So there was a variation of things that helped with their education that I'd done myself.
Mm.
And when I'd done that back in the 80s, I was finding myself on television programs like Vanessa Phillips, Esther Ranson, because we're all having a go at me. Not in particular, the out there people, critics. Why is he taking his children out? He's like, they can't do this, you shouldn't do this. Anyway, I explained to them, I come from a Romani culture, which are traveling people. And we're very self-respectful, and we earn money from the age of 10 or 11. As soon as we're able to earn money, however we earn it, that's what we'll start doing. And I did my autobiography 2 years ago at the Stair, in my boardroom. My ghostwriter, who used to work for the Sunday Times, slapped a front page of the Daily Mail on the desk for me. And it was talking about how Simon Cowell is doing exactly the same thing with his son, and how MPs in the House of the Parliament are putting out there to young kids to start earning money, whether it's paper rounds, cleaning windows, whatever it is, entrepreneurship needs to start early.
Mm.
I've done that. Well, I've done it when I was 50 years ago, when it was my age. And I've done it with my sons, it was wrong. Now they're saying it's right.
Yeah. And do you like working with your sons?
Yeah, we have a great time. It's good to have young blood in the business.
Mm.
I mean, he takes care of a lot of the, well, as partners, and he's a full partner of this business. He owns the business as well as me. He's co-owned. He bought his way into that as he developed with his profits. And it's exactly 50-50. And the good thing about that is he's got his customers he deals with, and I've got my customers that deals with different personalities.
Yeah.
I say that suit him, it don't suit me.
Mm.
And this modern technology, I mean, doing deals on WhatsApp nowadays is a way of life for us.
Mm. And didn't Tom Jr. set up on his own, almost became a competitor?
No, I wouldn't say he was a competitor. He was more in the restoring cars and classic cars. People would like to, you know, competitors, not something we look at. There's a big marketplace out there and it's enough for everybody. He had a great education in this business. He introduced more of the classic car side of it in 2008. When the credit crunch came here, we talked about how we should maybe do a bit more with that because people were investing in that type of thing. And it grew and it grew and it grew. He started to enjoy doing that type of thing. He enjoyed looking at how a car can be restored, where it can become. So it's time consuming, it's very passionate about that. As opposed to me, it's a quick deal, I just do the deals. I've got a reputation as a deal maker because I make deals that happens.
Mm.
The way he runs his business is a bit more long term.
Yeah.
He still sells supercars and other cars, but you know, unlike him and anybody else, we don't feel there's any competitors. We don't look at a competitor. If it was my son, I've got no problem.
Mm.
If there's one thing I've got no problem bowing to two people in life, and my two sons, I've got no problem with that. I've got a problem with everybody else.
Yeah.
Because I refuse to do that.
Yeah.
Because I don't need to do it. It's not for me to do, and it'll never be done.
Mm. Has anyone ever brought a car off you with Bitcoin?
Yeah, we've done a deal recently with Bitcoin. We'll take any currency.
Yeah. And cash? Do people come in and pay with cash?
Don't take cash.
No.
Take up to £9,000. And if it's £9,000, it goes straight to the bank.
Yeah.
You know, going back in my early days, when I bought and sold cars as a teenager, I bought and sold cars with a suitcase of cash.
Yeah.
But when 100,000 was, we could buy a lot of cars. A new Rolls Royce in 1977 was £25,600, a new Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
So paying for two Rolls Royce out of a suitcase was not a problem.
No.
And that's how you dealt.
For years, people have been asking me where I buy my watches. Many of you may know I'm a watch collector, I'm a watch investor, and those as an asset class have done me very well in the last 15 years. I have never shared where I source my watches from or my watch dealer until now. My watch dealer used to be a professional footballer for Manchester United, and he formed a watch brand called Broadwalk. And he sources the higher-end brands like Rolex, Audemars Piguet, Patek Philippe and Richard Mille. I trust him, I've used him for many years, and recently we've done a partnership. Hence, I'm inviting you, if you want to start investing in watches and protect your money from the banks and inflation, to check out Broadwalk. That's Broadwalk. And the website is broadwalkgroup.com. The email is sales@broadwalkgroup.com. And please don't share this, but his number is 07496 878153. Obviously, only message him if you're serious about buying and investing in the higher-end watches. People have been asking me for years, and for the first time ever, you can get access to my watch team.
In them days,
yeah,
you paid by cash. You know, there's not bank transfers or bankers' drafts.
Yeah.
But you know, that died out, as it does now. I mean, I still carry cash in my pocket to pay for things because I'm old school.
Mm.
I don't like using a credit card if I can help it.
Yeah.
And I've never been one for into borrowing in any event.
Nah.
It's very, very, there'll be some people watch this podcast and actually think it's nearly an impossible statement to make. I have never had a hire purchase agreement in my life for anything.
Right.
So I've reinvested every time I've made money.
Yeah.
I've reinvested into the business, reinvested it. And that's where I made it the hard way, but there's nobody knocked on my door to tell me all the money. No. It's what you call a debt-free journey.
So if you have or own a car, you'll buy it outright?
Everything's paid for, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's paid for.
Do you do consignment sometimes when you sell cars?
You know, we'll do that. We'll do that with customers who we've dealt with more than 10 years.
Yeah.
Who are what we call long, loyal, reliable customers for a number of reasons. That type of arrangement can be quite difficult to actually get the deal done. So you need to know the personality you're dealing with and trust them so they can help you work together.
Yeah.
But as a rule of thumb, I've always been of the attitude and always talked to Carl about this. We like to have it and we own it.
Yeah.
And then we can do what we want to do with it.
Yeah.
That's really the right way. But sometimes, you know, you've got no option to keep the deal, keep the customer and get a bit better price. You've got to do it that way.
Yeah. Can you remember the first car you ever sold? Oh,
sorry.
That's all right. Sorry.
Okay, go on.
Power
go on. Cut. Yeah. No, it's the honest sensor. That's it. You can edit that, can you?
Yeah.
The first car I ever sold, it was a Range Rover in 1971. It just came out with £1,940 when they came out.
Wow, and that's I heard inflation.
It, yeah, that's what it was when it came out.
Yeah, and did you make all right on it?
I paid £250.
And what did you sell it for?
£250 more, so
yeah,
£2,100.
Wow.
So back then, £2,100 was the price of a new Range Rover, and it was put together by a friend of my father who I know wanted one, and a relative who I knew who wanted to sell one, who had one coming.
Yeah.
And I just put the deal together.
Yeah.
And then I got the flavour, and then I used to go to the car auctions in Scotland, and I used to go there on my days off school, which was a Wednesday and a Thursday. Wednesday was in Glasgow, and Thursday was in Edinburgh auction in Scotland.
Mm.
So I used to go there, sit, watch. I mean, Glasgow auction in the 70s, it was a place where a lot of things went on apart from buying and selling cars. So for a young guy to see that, it was quite an experience. And it stood me in good stead. It's what you call being streetwise.
Mm.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but I actually, this is some deals coming through, excuse me. I actually lecture where we are sitting here now. I once a month lecture to school children. One of the schools is Ripton. Ripton's probably the most exclusive private school in Europe. The essence of the story is, here's a guy lecturing to school children who can't read and write. I mean, I can't read, I can just about write. My maths is very good. But as the Repton and other school teachers would make it or put it, they can teach them what they need to teach them in life, but they can't teach them how to be business people because they're not business people.
Mm.
So entrepreneurship is something that you don't really teach, but you can explain to people how it works.
Yeah.
And if you get that spark in them and give them that belief, and seen here is a belief, it can drive them forward.
Mm.
And they can't get that from a school teacher.
And why
school teacher's not done it.
Yeah, why don't you think they teach about entrepreneurship in school?
Well, first of all, how can you teach somebody about entrepreneurship if they're not an entrepreneur?
Mm. So you think entrepreneur is something that's born in you, do you?
Well, yeah, and I do believe, I just said to you that you're not going to teach me how to play golf like Tiger Woods, are you?
No, but you could learn golf, couldn't you, from someone who's a good golf coach?
Yeah, but that, exactly.
Mm.
So you're not going to learn, a school teacher's not a good business person, are they?
No, no, they're not.
That's the point.
Mm.
And I've opened up an area in that sector, unlike anybody in business that I'm aware of, I understand I have, where it gives me, for me, it's giving back to my area and my community what they've given to me.
Yeah.
You know, we own half this village.
Mm.
Not just this showroom. When I arrived here 42 years ago, I arrived here where you're sitting, but this is the basement of the new showroom. On the ground floor, I arrived here in a caravan,
yeah.
Me and my wife, and half an acre of ground. There's now 50 acres on the Hartley estate, and I have 200 holiday homes in the village.
Mm.
So that's all been all because of the area, really.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you read the letter on the wall up the stair with the coat of arms. Did you read the letter on the wall?
I was having a look. Was that
There's one on this hallway here.
Yeah.
I'd like you to read the wording on that letter
yeah.
in this podcast, because I think it sums up exactly what I'm trying to say to you. They hold me responsible. They make a point of how responsible I was for making the economy the way it is today in this area.
Mm.
And they gave me the coat of arms to keep on here for life.
Right.
Which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Never been done.
No.
So the point they're making, people who have had come here to fly in helicopters and make visits and bring money and wealth wouldn't have come here had Tom Hartley not been here.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Mm.
So, I just celebrated my 62nd birthday the weekend. I get great pleasure out of speaking with children here for an hour and telling them the things in life that will hit them to try and help them and tell them to, be focused, to put a bit more time. I use phrases. I also do videos, I don't know if you've watched them or not, where I refer to people being lazy bastards in the morning. You wouldn't believe the response. It comes from all over the world, from their videos, people motivating people. And actually, I had one at the weekend. I've got to show you this. I had one at the weekend come in. An email from a guy, and I actually replied to him last night, and he basically said, you know, my life was falling apart, and I seen what you said. I got Mark together. He said, now things are so great in my life. I've been watching, you know, a bit of a motivation video.
Mm.
And I get emails from very powerful people who tell me it keeps them on the toes,
and
they don't get complacent, because complacence is a horrible thing.
Yeah.
Anybody thinks everything you've got today can be there tomorrow is wrong. That's not always the case.
No.
You got to make it be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I enjoy trying to help youngsters, and I'm not aware of anybody else that has in business, definitely not the car business for sure. I move as I need to just to, can you look at that for a second? Just read that. Look at the date when it came in.
So this was 17th of June from Lewis Bunting.
2 days ago.
Good afternoon. This might not ever reach Tom, but still. Tom, today is the 17th of June, your birthday. Happy birthday. A day ago, I finished your book. And from what you have spoken of today is a milestone for you today and me as well as family, friends and your fans are happy for you. The book is just no words to explain. So inspirational from beginning to end. I'm gutted I missed the time when you signed them. I've taken a lot on board already from what's already in the book prior to reading it. As they say, great minds think alike. I've got it set in my mind. I'm coming to see your estate one day and to purchase a car there. No two ways it will happen. Enjoy the rest of your birthday.
I get them all the time.
Forklift instructor.
Yeah, I get them all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know how much special that makes me feel?
Yeah.
You really can't put into words how special that makes me feel.
No. And what is it to be streetwise? Like, what do you learn on the street that you don't learn in school?
Well, it's so important. It's so important. I mean, I don't know you that well. But I know you're fairly, you're good at what you do. So obviously, I would like to be, not being judgmental, but I'd like to assume that you've got quite a bit of streetwise in you and understand that you've been out there, you've had difficult times. Some people can make money so quick in life, and as you used the word complacency a minute ago, they're not streetwise. You know, they haven't had it hard. They haven't seen people who've had it hard. I had a very unfortunate, as a young guy, I was a self-made millionaire when I was 18 in 1979. When I was a millionaire, self-made in 18, 1979, the only people that were millionaires at my age at the time were the Arabs or rock stars. They weren't business people. But I had a situation arise by giants of the business, i.e. Porsche, BMW, and Mercedes in particular. They ganged up on me and they created a thing called type approval number because I was importing cars. The only person import, first person to import cars into the UK of luxury cars was Tom Hartley. Not arguable, fact, fact. And I was making that much money as a teenager, but I loved doing it anyway. I wasn't thinking about the money, I just loved doing the deals. And they ganged up on me and created type approval number. And because the type approval number meant one car, one person, not a lot of cars per person, you couldn't import them. And I had to lose my deposits to put me out of business. So it put me out of business at an age where I'd already been there and done it before I was 20. And then I had a health problem with my eyes. Coracoconus had an eye disease, I'd have a big operation. And I let everything sort of just disappeared. There's my complacency. I wasn't complacent, I just got a bit of bad luck. And I was too good at what I was doing that caused me the problem. So I'd start all over again. But it was never going to be a problem to start all over again because I'd already been there. I know what I had to do, but just do it a little bit of a different way. And it was a great experience. So that's the part of being streetwise. You have to, you know, there's something I always use when I'm lecturing to children is experience, gut feeling and experience is far better than research and training. In other words, if you experience it and you have a gut feeling for it, right, it's far better than research and training. Research and training doesn't give it to you. It gives you an idea. It doesn't give it to you. It's like my sons, when you said about how I educated them. Geography. When I used to go out to places like Stratford or to Dundee in Scotland, I'd take them with me. They'd see it. I wouldn't show them on a book. That's Dundee. That's Stratford. They go to the places and visit them.
Yeah.
So that's what I call the real thing. You know, that's experiencing streetwise.
Yeah.
Streetwise can be misinterpreted into other areas. Other things is, you know, not always trusting somebody. And there's a very fine line on how you deal with that, because you lose a lot of business if you don't trust people, and you'll lose a lot of business if you trust everybody. So it's a very fine line.
Who's the most famous person you've sold a car to?
They've all been here. The Pope's not been here.
Yeah.
and the Queen's not been here. But I think we need to take some shots of my existing original showroom now, because it's a 70s office.
Yeah.
I need you to see that.
Okay.
And they're all on the wall.
Yeah.
Andrew Lloyd Webber's, Rod Stewart's, Elton John's.
Yeah.
Oh, carry on.
Yeah.
Carry on. I said, I know the Pope hasn't been here. And God rest her soul, I know the Queen never did visit here. But I think everybody else has.
Yeah. What do you think is easier to sell, 10 Fords or one Bugatti?
That's quite a good question. What, as we are in the marketplace just now?
Yeah.
Well, the easy answer to that question is it depends on the price of them.
Right.
Simple as that. Price dictates everything.
Right.
There's nothing that's not easy to sell if it's priced properly.
Yeah.
That's a simple answer. You know, if there are people out there who are trying to go with the flow and it's not happening, that's because it's too high on price.
Yeah. If there's one client you'd love to have but you haven't got, who would it be?
Do you know, that's quite a good question. It's very difficult to answer that question because, you need to go in the office and have a look at the other stuff over there, because quite that question about the historic and the people that have been here is quite... And by the way, were you aware of the Mother Office?
Yeah.
Did you go in there? Have you been in there?
The one with all the pictures
on
the
wall. Have you
been there, have you? Yeah, yeah. In the other building.
So you know what it feels like there.
Yeah.
Do you feel anything when you go in there? Is the aura in that office?
Yeah, history.
Is there?
Yeah.
You feel it. I take young guys in there and like they have orgasms. Like, wow. You know? It's like, you know, we don't see this today.
Yeah.
No computers on the desk.
Yeah.
And yet they can smell and feel, and you can't smell and feel exactly what's happening there.
Yeah.
And it still happens today. And that'll never change, it'll always be that way.
Yeah.
So, some interesting people I admire a lot of people. I admire a lot of people, and successful. I like people who are dedicated and still, you know, don't find themselves just floating up and down in a yacht in the Caribbean, flying the private jet everywhere. I know life should be enjoyed, but I like people who see it to the end and carry on doing it.
Yeah.
Carry on doing it to the end.
Mm. And if you could have £1 million cash or 1 million extra engaged social media followers, which would you have and why?
If I could have £1 million
cash or 1 million extra engaged social media followers, which would you take?
Well, the £1 million in cash is not going to change my lifestyle in any way at all or what I do, as much as I'd want to have it. The million followers on social media, I know it sounds very difficult. I know you've got lots of followers to do your YouTube stuff, but I have a great, I think just now about 140,000 or so followers. Between me and Carl, we've got about 300,000. And the followers that I've got, I'm also a great believer in quality about the quantity.
Mm.
So in answer to your question, without being rude about it, I don't think the million followers, the extra followers I'd have, would be any more loyal than the 130,000 I've got now. Because I do believe the 130,000 followers I've got are really loyal, the proper followers.
Yeah.
At the same token, on that note, as you well know, there are some knobheads out there that just do some stupid statements, stupid things. We have comments sometimes from people we've never even met, don't even know them.
Yeah.
And they make it sound like you do.
Mm.
But in life, these things come along to test you. In fact, recently I can't talk about it on camera, but I would love to talk about it on camera, but I can't. I'm facing a challenge at the moment that's quite just absolutely hilarious to think that I'm having to deal with what I'm having to deal with, but I'm going to deal with it, and I'm going to come out of it with the right way and an apology.
So there's like some legal cases or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
What, someone suing you?
No. It's to do with, I can't talk about it too much. It's to do with a very serious body out there, a government area body, and it's about information that has been caused by a staff member.
Right.
Communicating.
Mm.
I can't say any more than that about it, but it's quite out there.
Yeah.
And it's not been embarrassing for me because it's just another chapter in my cook.
Mm.
It's just something else I'll deal with.
Yeah.
But if you want to be a critic, you can make something of it.
Mm.
I want to make something of it.
Yeah.
When in fact, there's nothing to make of it.
Yeah.
So these are things that, you know, the challenges in life.
Mm. What's the easiest car to nick?
Well, I live in London 50% of my time. I live in Knightsbridge. In fact, I'm going there tonight. I spend the first part of the week, middle part of the week to the end, or sometimes the first part of the week. Anyway, 50-50 between here and London. And I was there with a friend 2-3 weeks ago, and my wife was driving. My wife had a new Range Rover, and he had a new Range Rover. He had the old model Range Rover, And they were parked. My house is right opposite the Historical Museum, and 800 yards from Knightsbridge. When I come up next morning at 7 o'clock, I went to go to the RAC Club, which is where I go to for the spa. I'm a member of this great place. I don't know if you've ever been to the RAC Club. No. A fabulous place, fantastic. And when I went outside, I could only see one Range Rover. So I said to my friend, I said, you know, you come down here with a Range Rover. He said, there's only one Range Rover outside. And he got nicked.
Right.
In answer to your question, the easiest car in the world to nick, and in fact, you can't get one insured in London now, a Range Rover, they won't insure it.
Wow.
That's a fact.
Mm.
And the policeman told me when he came round to my house, he said, hey, Mr. Hartley, he said, he was a bit of a follower, by the way, he was a follower on social media,
yeah.
As it happens, the Bobby, you come round. He said, I know you're in the car business. He said, but you know, 120 cars a day, Mayfair, South Kensington, Knightsbridge, Chelsea,
shit.
In central London get stolen.
And watches get nicked there, don't they, a lot?
And 75% of the Range Rovers.
Shit.
Of the 120.
Wow. What advice would you give to yourself if you were starting again? What would you do differently?
I wouldn't do anything differently.
Nothing at all?
No.
No regrets?
No regrets, no.
No mistakes?
I mean, plenty of mistakes.
Yeah.
Plenty of mistakes. Mm. But they weren't regrets.
Yeah.
They were educational.
Mm.
And I teach this to kids here. Anybody who thinks that they can go through life and don't make mistakes, one of you missed a bit of pretty big bollocks, is basically a liar. Okay? There's plenty of them out there.
Yeah.
But it's just a liar.
Mm.
You have to make mistakes in life. You know, I hear some quotes that talk about the guy who Harry Potter failed so many times, and they talk about, you know, the great baseball player, how he nearly gave up. I had a situation where I've ever felt I was going to give up. Not really, come close to it once or twice, but stuck with it, and stuck with my dream. And I often say this, and it's quite difficult to believe, but this place as you see it now, I've seen it like this as a kid. It was a vision.
Mm.
It was a vision, a dream.
Yeah.
Pretty hard to believe, but and if you don't believe, I don't care, but it's the truth.
Mm. Well, Arnie's just released his documentary and he talks a lot about seeing things before they happen, having a great imagination.
It's the story of my life.
Yeah.
It's the story of my life. Feeling. Mm. I get my best ideas at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, it comes and I think about it and I get it done.
Mm.
I deal with it. It's an incredible thing. Vision's an incredible thing, but it's a unique gift to have.
Mm.
People do have it. I'd like to think I've had it. Well, I know I've had it.
Yeah.
I know I've got it, for a fact.
Is it a good time now to buy or sell a car?
There's never a good time to buy or sell a car.
Never?
No, if you're a seller, it's the problem why you're selling it. And if you're a buyer, you got to pay the price.
Yeah.
So the answer to the question, without being blunt on that answer, is there's never a good, you got to do it today.
Mm.
Whatever's the right thing to do, you must do it. What's the bad time to sell a car when you're losing so much money? But if that's what you need to do today, that's what you need to do.
Yeah.
That's how it has to be.
Mm.
And that's the entrepreneurship opinion and gut feeling coming out on me.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs, like, they move on. You know, they don't look back.
Mm.
Even the mistakes they've made or the good deals, they make a good deal today, they don't go and celebrate it.
No.
It's just another deal.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Mm. Are you still hungry?
Hungrier than ever.
Yeah? Do you think you'll just do this forever?
Ever. I'll be found dead in here. that's a fact. I will be found dead in the showroom.
Yeah.
Or the other showroom. And that's the way I'd like to die.
Mm.
And when I get die, I'm going to get buried on here. So this is my life, and this is what I do, and I do it because I love doing it, I love the buzz. I'm very passionate about the name Tom Hartley, the brand, very passionate. I love wearing it, I love seeing it, I love hearing it, because it's been so much to me in my life, and it is my life.
What keeps you hungry?
Tom Hartley. Somebody asked me a question recently, it was a great question. And it wasn't a podcast, it was an interview I was doing by, it was an interview in an American magazine, New York something. And he said, what makes you so good at selling, what makes you so great at selling cars? I said, being Tom Hartley. Which is what it is, being Tom Hartley. It's my technique. It's background, reputation, trust. All the things that you want to have to do business with a person. And that's why I'm so passionate about the name.
Mm.
It is somebody that I don't think you'll ever speak to anybody in business that's more passionate about the name of the brand than I am.
Mm.
You get people like Richard Branson would feel the same thing and say the same thing, because that's how he feels about his airlines and his rockets and his other businesses. You get somebody like Donald Trump, same thing. You see, I think Donald Trump's a great thing, and a great person for America as a president. I personally think that. Got slagged off for some people for it. 75 million other people think it as well.
Mm.
You know, he had the country in a great way, in a great place. And as a businessman, like we just talked about school teachers, these politics, you need, this country's need, even this country needs business people to run it.
Mm.
Streetwise.
Yeah. So if there was a competition, start from scratch, no contacts, yourself versus your son, Carl, who's going to sell the most cars?
Well, you'd like to think 50 years of experience would be better than 30. Well, in his case, it's almost now, 20 years of experience for him. He's nearly close to 20. He's been doing it since he was 12.
Mm.
I still think there's no experience like old school.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me, very old school. There's no experience like that, and I don't know if you'd agree with that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to have that competition with him because he's very good at what he does.
Yeah.
But as somebody would say, the acorn never falls too far from the tree. So I think that's got a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
But he's got his own qualities and his own skills.
Mm.
And we got on well. We do, you know, as father and son, I think we're a great team.
Mm.
And believe it or not, we don't see a lot of each other.
No.
you know, because I'm at the London office a lot. He's there as well sometimes, but he lives 65 yards from me here on the Hartley Estate, and he'd be as well to live 25 miles from me.
Yeah.
Because I don't visit him a lot because I like to have his private time with his family.
Mm.
I see him, we pass like ships, and by the way, we communicate every hour.
Yeah.
Every hour on the hour. In fact, something's coming through from now. It's just coming through. Yeah. So we always have communication, and that's very important.
Yeah.
Important.
Mm. If anyone wants to start up in the car business, what advice would you give them?
It'd be very difficult for anybody to start up in any business today. But, and I mean that, I think about how difficult it would be, health and safety, all that shit that goes with it. You know, it'd be very difficult to start up in a business, whatever it was. But the thing about it is, if somebody wants to do any business and start up on it, and they give it the heart and soul and the effort, and not 9 till 5, they'll be successful.
Mm.
They will be successful.
Yeah.
Advice-wise, I would say, what's the running cost, expenses? It's always key to any business.
Mm.
You could interview, and I'm sure you have, you can interview some people that make 1 million or 10 million a year, and it costs them 10 million a year to run the business.
Mm.
They made zero.
Mm.
They do all, they can have all the computers, all the technology, all the statistics, all the research. If they're not taking care of the pennies, they'll not take care of the pounds.
Mm.
As long as more's coming in than going out,
yeah,
you're going to make profit.
Yeah.
Some people don't see it that way. And that's where I've seen over the years, so many partnerships have fallen out. Because you always get a partnership. You get one who's the front guy, who's doing everything, and the other guy in the background, right?
Mm.
The one in the background knows exactly what's happening because he's doing the figures. So when the guy at the front thinks he's made £10, and they have to take the tax and VAT off of that £10, split 50-50, pay the valet to pay the cleaner,
mm.
he hasn't earned £10.
Yeah.
He's earned about one,
mm.
£1.50. He thinks he's earned 10.
Yeah.
So when it comes to split up the fallout,
mm.
he said, we earned 10. He said, no, we didn't. We earned 10. We took the VAT off of it, the tax off of it, running costs, expenses, advertising, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
They don't understand it. So yeah. Then the fallout.
Yeah.
So that's running a business, watching your costs
mm.
on anything, because you can get carried away with that.
Mm. What would be a good car investment around about 50 grand?
Around about 50,000, a good car investment. As for a classic goes, a Jaguar.
Yeah.
Mm. A Jaguar. Porsches have exceeded that now.
Yeah.
I mean, most Porsches with a hole in the wing, and 5 holes in the bonnet, and the engine falling out is worth 50 grand.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So you're not going to buy one of them.
Yeah.
And then a Jaguar, you buy a good E-Type, E-Type Coupe, or you buy even some of the saloon cars, a good condition one, that sort of price. Rolls Royce, believe it or not, is some 70s Rolls Royces would be a good buy.
Right. And then 100 grand?
£100,000, you'd get, you get some Porsches now, we're talking to Porsche level.
Yeah.
Porsche Entry, you get a few Ferraris.
Yeah. 355, is that all right?
You get a 328. 355, yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a very nice 355 at the minute, I think, which is 120.
Yeah.
Manual upstairs.
You got a 348, have you here?
Yeah, very nice, yeah.
Yeah, they all right?
That's not a good buy.
Yeah.
That's not that price range.
Yeah.
It's a good buy, 75,000.
Right.
Done 9,000 miles.
Wow.
Good buy it is, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know why we haven't sold that car.
Yeah. Yeah, I better not go and have a look at that.
Yeah, I tell you what, you mentioned it as a good buy. I think we'll be talking 12 months time from now, God spares us, and I'll say to you, I told you how good a buy that car was.
Yeah.
120.
Wow.
Or 100.
Yeah.
You know, mm. I see it going that way,
yeah.
As opposed to the 75 grand sitting in the bank.
Yeah, yeah, going down. 4%,
we're getting 4%, and that's not keeping up with inflation.
Yeah.
So it's like you're losing 6%.
Yeah. What about £250,000? What's a good car investment about £250,000 level?
Ferrari.
Yeah.
Ferrari's very good. Ferrari's strong. Ferrari's been very clever on what they do. You know, they watch how they manufacture. They watch how they control the stuff that they do.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're very good at what they do.
Yeah. And what about million?
£1 million? Well, just a bit over £1 million, which is a good investment, is the McLaren P1s.
Yeah.
I think they're very good for that sort of price.
What can you get an F40 for?
Trying to buy one now.
Yeah.
as we speak.
Yeah, I really like those cars.
Yeah, I'm trying to buy one done 12,000 miles.
Yeah.
Very nice car. I was curious before. I only looked at photographs the other day.
Yeah.
Very nice. This was last week. I was going over there. There we go. That's the car. That's the registration. That was last week, like Tuesday.
Mm. Yeah, they're lovely, aren't
they? I've been on the phone before, started talking to you, trying to make a decision, but you won't make a decision. Right. People who've got F40s, they get a bit paranoid because, you know, they want the car and the money.
Yeah.
Because of the way the value they've gone.
Mm.
That car's 2.2 million.
Right, yeah.
Had the same car for sale for 1.2 million 4 years ago.
Yeah, I remember when they were 800 and a million.
I had them for 167,000. So we're going to talk some numbers? Okay. I had F40 here for £167,000. I mean, it's quite incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I had a conversation the other day to my daughter. She's just had a new Defender. I was telling her, when I was selling cars in the 70s, things like a passenger door mirror was an extra. It used to be known as a PDM.
Yes.
Passenger door mirror. Top tint on the windscreen, sunroof and the sunroof. It's unbelievable.
Mm.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Rob, can I take just 2 seconds?
Well, we're pretty much done. So.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk to me about in regards?
Best advice you ever remember receiving?
Best advice, never refuse profit on a car. My father told me that. Never refuse profit, in other words.
Mm.
If somebody's made up in your profit, greed destroys.
Right.
Greed's not a good thing.
Yeah. And then worst advice you ever remember receiving?
I don't think I ever received bad advice.
No.
You know, I might. They would have come into the mistake category, but I don't think I ever received bad advice.
Mm.
So I think, the best advice I ever was taken, as I said to you, is never to refuse profit, because you'll never go skint taking profit.
Yeah.
You're making money.
Mm.
Whether you can make more next week or the week after, that's it. Move on.
Yeah.
You know, the great thing about life, entrepreneurs' skills is about moving on. They forget bad deals and they're just driven. When I started writing my book, I'll finish on this note, I had to make some reflections over 40 years I'd never made in my life because I never had time to make reflections.
On to the next.
Because I was writing a book, I had to start making reflections because I couldn't tell my story.
Yeah.
Have you got a copy of my autobiography?
No.
I'll give you a copy while you're here.
Thank you.
It's actually better on audio, I'm told, than it is to read it. Yeah. I don't read books anyway, but it's a bestseller on Amazon for a business. It's a best-selling car book by a car dealer ever to date.
Great.
So it took me 12 months to do it one day a week.
Yeah.
From 8 in the morning to late at night.
Mm.
But it was one of the best things I've ever done in my life.
Yeah. And this show's called Disruptors. What does that word mean to you?
It's called what?
Disruptors.
What does it mean to me?
Yeah.
Disruption means that it makes you feel uncomfortable.
Mm.
No?
Yeah.
And will this make somebody feel uncomfortable?
Will this?
Yeah.
Depends.
Why do you call it disruption?
Because change, forward progress, momentum, not getting comfortable, the opposite of comfort.
Which is what we talked about.
Yeah.
I've talked to you about complacency.
Mm.
I've told you some of the things that salesmen do that I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
That people will pick up for this program.
Mm.
One thing that people can't see, in my experience, I don't know, and I'm not turning the chair around here, but I'm not a flamboyant person, despite my success and profile. I don't want a private jet. I don't want private jets anyway because I'm claustrophobic. I don't want a yacht because I don't like the sea. Okay, so I'm happy with my golf clubs, a glass of wine, and a good meal.
Mm.
That's fine for me.
Yeah.
I'm spoiled to drive whatever car I want to drive. It's not a problem to drive them. So there's not a problem there. The point I'm making is, anybody that's challenging somebody with a track record and still doing what they've done successfully over the years would be a bit stupid. So they should watch this podcast, and I hope they enjoy it.
Mm. And where can we follow you? Find out a bit more about your books and what you do and your cars you've got for sale.
It's just on my Instagram page, Tom Hartley Cars.
Yeah.
And I'm on Facebook as Tom Hartley. And I'm on LinkedIn as Tom Hartley.
Mm.
And if the followers want to follow me there, the great thing about my followers, as I said, I say it as it is. If they ask me a question, I give them the right answer.
Mm.
If it's the wrong answer, I say I don't know.
Mm.
So I'm very loyal to them as much as they're loyal to me.
Mm.
And it plays a big part of my life. You know, when I'm in London nowadays, because the brand's so well known down there, it is not everywhere, but in particular, a lot of our customers, 50% are in London.
Mm.
Very difficult to go anywhere in London and not bump into some of my followers.
Yeah.
Very difficult. Because they know, they see the name, I know it helps, you've got a Tom Hartley cap on, but they know the brand and they know what I do, and they know it all from social media.
Mm.
It's a great thing.
Mm.
Great thing. I think it's got its weak points, but I think overall, it's a great thing, social media.
Mm.
It pitches people together.
Yeah.
And it gets people closer, it gets you to learn. I've made so many friends from it.
Mm.
There's my email that just came through a minute ago.
Mm.
That's from social media.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for having us in the showroom.
Really, thank you very much.
Bloody expensive podcast.
Every time you come here, it's unbelievable. I said you can podcast my wife off, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.